This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Brandon Adamson. We're going to be discussing the implosion of the alt-right. Brandon, great talking to you again.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
So with the whole alt-right scene, it seemed to have peaked during the election. It kind of stagnated during Trump's presidency, and there were a few major PR blunders, one of them being Howlgate, and the other one being Charlottesville, and there's been this kind of overall stagnation, and now it seems that there's been this big implosion of the alt-right into these a lot of infighting, different splintering of factions. The most recent case is involving Matthew Heimbach getting arrested. And Brandon, a lot of these issues touch upon your criticisms of the alt-right and the kind of the reasons why you decided to go your own way.
Yeah, I think that you and I kind of saw this sort of thing happening a few years ago, and that's kind of why I started going off in my own direction towards the fringes, because you could just see that there were these deep ideological differences, but that they just were like being kind of ignored. But if you were really paying attention, you could be like, well, I could see how this isn't all going to fit together. Yeah, I would say that it seemed like it was always seemed more cohesive when there was like a common enemy during the election and around those times, or whenever there's like a riot or anything like that, everyone kind of as soon as there's like a lull, then they all kind of like turn on each other. that's what I've kind of seen. I think also there was a split between the people who, after the election, kind of just became like Trump's cheerleaders, basically.
Are you talking about the alt-right and the Breitbart scene?
No, well, them, but also the people in the alt-right that were just like, oh, we just need to get rid of talking about these other hot-button issues and just kind of move more towards like the Trump populist nationalism, and don't talk about this other stuff that we're just going to and also they kind of project their own beliefs on Trump, like he's whatever you want them to be. Like, just yesterday I think Ricky Vaughn or someone was like, yeah, the globalists have been purged, you know, because Trump fired a couple of high-level people.
Yeah, because if you look at Rex Tillerson, I'm not a fan of him, but he's primarily a businessman, so he's not going to be very ideological. Pompeo, who was the director of the CIA, who's replacing Tillerson's like a full-on neocon.
Right, and then the other, the woman is like, she was involved in the, allegedly in the Iraq, like, torture business. Just another total neocon who was accused of, like, covering up some of that stuff. So it's like, it's just one of those things where people kind of project their own beliefs onto him. And I think, I don't know, I'm just not capable of doing that sort of thing. Like, I just, maybe I think we're all guilty of it at times because we kind of, because we don't have any real candidates. Like, we kind of, like,
we have Roger Blackstone.
Well, yeah, there's always Blackstone. But you know what I mean, right? It's kind of like, there's someone who, like, maybe barely says something that we kind of agree with, and we're like, yeah, he's our guy or whatever. But so you just, like, believe harder in it. But I don't know. And then there's also the people who I think want, they want to kind of emulate, like, European identitarian movements. And you see, and moving more towards that, and but make in the context of, like, American identity. So you have those people, and I think that another big split is over the people who really want to take back. They think they can take back America as a whole, versus those who are more interested in the Balkanization and secession movements, or creating some kind of city state somewhere. And so I think that is a big another deep division, because if those are your two separate goals, of course they're going to be the tactics you're not going to agree on, they're going to be completely different.
And we can talk about all these issues. Since you touched upon Trump, it's important to point out that basically Trump's core message early on was a hybrid of Buchanan populism on issues like trade and immigration mixed with social centrism. And that, I mean, that's a winning platform, and that's similar to what Ross Perot tried to do with the Reform Party, but that's pretty much obsolete now, and now he's basically just a generic Republican.
Well, he's still doing some of that, but I think the point is that these a lot of these Catholic American identitarians or whatever that are coming up that are like, yeah, this is the direction we need to go in, they're kind of missing the fact that, like, that Trump won as basically, like, kind of a social liberal. Remember, he said, like, in his speech at the convention, like, he wanted to protect the LGBT community and all that sort of thing. So it's like this idea that it's going to, that you're bringing up this this kind of Buchanan populism with Christian identity and Catholicism and all of this fighting degeneracy sort of thing, banning this and that. That's like, that's way less of a starter electorally than what Trump did. And Trump only barely won by a paper-thin margin. So,
and there was there was a recent election in Pennsylvania where this was a working class white district in western Pennsylvania that Trump won by 20%, and you had an election where you had a Democrat running on a more working class oriented platform, and he defeated the Republican by about 20 points ahead, who was running as just a generic Republican. So Trump is in a difficult position because the whole Republican power structure wants him to go along with what the Republican Party wants, and he also has the deep state to deal with. But if he wants to win, the winning strategy in the general election would be as to go back to his original core message, which would be Buchanan-style populism mixed with centrism. But I don't see that happening. I see Trump continuing to go in a Republican direction, and his chances of getting reelected, I mean, who knows what could happen, but I think they're slim.
Yeah, I don't know yet. Maybe he'll go back in the other direction, but he also has to be able to articulate it, and there's he's kind of, his articulation has kind of been all over the place with regard to that. But I also think that a bigger problem with this whole idea of American identitarianism is that we've already arrived at a post-American identity. Like, they're not going back to a lot of these young people are basically kind of like trying to recreate the wheel, because they're all of this stuff. I mean, I'm older, so I remember Buchanan ran on this stuff in 1992, 96. The Republicans, the theme of their convention in 1992 was family values. Remember Dan Quayle and Murphy Brown and all that. And it's now the U.S. is only, I think, like maybe like 55% or 60% white. So you inherently built in, you've got so many people now that don't. You're basically the only American identity that exists is like kind of like that of an international airport. So, but that's basically what American identity means now. And so when you're going to like use the flag and George Washington and all that stuff, that doesn't resonate with all of these millions and millions of Indians and people in California and New York. Like, they have no plan to win any of these states. There's no candidates. Just to be able to win with the kind of majorities to overcome the legislative obstacles, because even Trump just won by like a paper thin margin. So you have to win 60 seats in the Senate to overcome a filibuster. So any kind of like immigration restrictions or any of these controversial things that they would want to implement, they would have to have 60 pro immigration restriction senators in order to do it, and then it's going to get shot down by the court.
And yeah, that's the thing with Trump, is Trump has come out in favor of this immigration bill called the RAISE Act, which would cut legal immigration down to 400,000 a year. I give him credit for supporting that, but the reality is there's just not the support in the Senate. And there's a Republican majority in the House and Senate, so the problem's not so much the Democrats, it's that there's this massive corporate wing of the Republican Party that's not going to support any reduction in immigration.
Yeah, well, there's kind of like a pincer between the anti-white multicultural left, you know, the SJWs, which are just like a huge amount of people now, and then they get together with like the corporate Republicans and the neocons, and they have like a pincer. Like, that's what happens in countries like France, even where they have a strong identitarian movement. Like, they just don't. There's like a built-in electoral ceiling that they're just by virtue of demographics. And I think that trying to emulate this kind of European identitarianism here, it's an apples and oranges, because the demographic situations in these European countries aren't as bad. Number one, like some of these countries like Sweden, they're still like 85% Swedish or whatnot. So you have you still have enough Swedish people there to be like to embrace a kind of nationalism and a kind of generic of civic or ethno identity, whereas here you don't have that. And then another difference is in the electoral system and the governments, right? Because here it's like winner take all. In those countries, like, you get, if you just even do kind of well in the elections, you get like parliamentary representation and things like that. Whereas in the U.S., you essentially get you get nothing unless you you win a majority. There are no runoffs or anything like that. So,
yeah, we have no, basically, it's totally rigged against any kind of third party. With the Italian election, there was that success with. There's actually two parties in Italy. There's the more right wing Lega party, and then there's a party called the Five Star Movement, which is more of a kind of, they're kind of a fusion of the populist left and the populist right, kind of similar to what you were describing as social centrism mixed with populism.
Too.
Yeah, and those two parties, the Five Star Movement and the Lega, have a coalition that's in charge now.
Yeah, and so this idea of we're going to take over the Republican Party and make it into this American identity, like, that's basically what there aren't enough Republicans, like, really, especially ones that are going to embrace this kind of this kind of platform in order to win the kind of majorities you need, even with the Republicans controlling all three branches of government. Now, they couldn't even, like, repeal Obamacare, really. Like, remember? Like, that was, like, they couldn't even do that, even when Obama was in office. And, I mean, he couldn't get anything through when he had the majority. He had a tough time. So it's like, because people can filibuster, they can do all of this, and, you know, then if you have, like, if Trump just starts giving executive orders or something like that, then, you know, what's going to happen? Like, these ICE agents are going to, like, refuse to comply, and then the media is going to make them into heroes. Like, it's just, and I don't know. I just don't, I don't see it. I think that our situation is not like Sweden or these other countries, because the demographics are different. The government system is different. I think our situation is kind of in between those countries and South Africa. In that, like, South Africa, they're just like an overwhelming minority, so they really have nothing they can do. They have no options at all. And then we're kind of like in between, where we can kind of maybe do something, but not really enough.
So back to the issue of the implosion of the alt-right, you said one of the key divides is between the Trump supporters who are American nationalists and then the more European-style identitarians. That's one divide. The other faction.
Well, I think those are the same people, basically.
Oh, so you're not talking about a divide?
No, I am, but those two are basically like the Trumpian nationalists, the Europe. Those are people like that kind of want to make that into like an American version of the Euro-identitarian movements.
Richard Spencer, who's probably the most prominent figure of the alt-right, he seems to be fairly disappointed with Trump.
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's just... there are those people who are just willing to be objective, really, and just look at and say, like, because I don't necessarily want to get behind someone just there and just be like a cheerleader. You know, if they do something I like, I'll be like, yeah, Trump, that was a good move by Trump. That was awesome. And then if they do something, if Trump does something that I disagree with, I'm bummed out. I want to point it out. I don't just like pretend that it's some kind of a 4D chess and like, oh, this is what he really means by doing this or something like that. Maybe there really is a 4D chess, but I'm old enough to where I've seen this game play out. And you know, when you think like, oh yeah, this guy is really he really means this or whatever, he's on a sudden it just doesn't happen.
With the whole incident with Matthew Heimbach and the disbanding of the traditional Workers' Party, how significant do you see that faction? You mentioned they're traditionalists, they're hardcore social conservatives, but they're also, they tend to be economic populists. They're not right-wing economically. What is your general thoughts on the disbanding of the traditional Workers' Party, their ideology, and how significant of a player were they?
I don't know. I mean, I was never a fan. As you know, I'm not much of a traditionalist, and I'm not a Christian, so I'm not into Christian identity or Orthodox. It's interesting though that people are trying to point to this scandal and associate it with like. Anyone who's like pro-white or anything like that, it's just kind of like, well, what about all of these like these traditionalists? You know, it seems to me that it's more just as, if not more, closely associated with so much of the hypocrisy that you see in these Christian like preachy moralists and traditionalists, and just like what a bunch of mumbo jumbo it all is. Like, so I don't know. I was never a fan of them. So I don't know. It's, they did run a couple of hit pieces on me,
Oh, yeah, I remember that. What exactly do they say?
I don't know. They basically ran a couple of snarky pieces. I won't get into them too much because they're I don't even remember too much, but just kind of like this harping about degeneracy and kind of a snarky kind of tone.
I think they said that you wanted your like gay urban swipple culture, but without like the black game bangers and to disrupt it. Something like that.
Yeah. So it was just something like that. I was never a fan, really. So I don't really care. I think what bothers me more is just the number one, like the hypocrisy of the a lot of the people that are like making fun of them or criticizing them, because I've been around a long time and I know who a lot of people are, and so to see somebody that you know has like a bunch of mugshots for all these like cornpone like redneck crimes, to see them like being like, oh, look at this is your trailer trash movement, and it's like, you know, you're not really the kind of person to be talking about optics or any of this stuff. So you have to really bite your tongue because you know who these people are, but you can't like, you don't want to dox people and things like that. So it's just kind of like, it's just a real kind of a drag. But I think that, you know, it was a good decision, I think, a few years ago to move more toward like left wing and just like away from this kind of toxic culture. It's just kind of like you could just see this coming, because you just look at this and you're just like, I don't agree with this stuff. I'm not really a good
so at this point,
I mean, I'm not even that.
At this point, you don't even
care that much about race. Yeah.
At this point, you don't even consider yourself to be part of the alt-right.
No, I mean, I haven't for quite a while. A few years ago, it was kind of more of like a, it was a completely different thing. I mean, you were around back then, covering these issues, so you remember. But no, I don't really. I still get called alt-right all the time. If you say anything politically incorrect, you get called alt-right. I mean, people like Milo have news articles written about them calling them alt-right. Journalists that even like interview alt-right people are get called alt-right. You know, so it's kind of like, all I am is just like, I'm pro-white because I am white, and that's really what it boils down to. And since I'm one quarter Italian and a Sicilian at that, even that is on shaky ground. So I think that it's just kind of like, it's one of those things where the other groups are just openly anti-white, so you're kind of looking for a way to defend yourself. But I'm in and that's, if they're attacking you based on race, then you end up kind of defending yourself based on that. But I'm much more into things like transhumanism and futurism and all of that than any of this other stuff that gets lumped in with this as a package deal that you're supposed to sign on to.
With alt-right, do you think there is a class divide? Because the Trad Workers Party was more of a working class movement. Heimbach and Parrott are from working class backgrounds. I think they're both from Indiana. I'm not 100% sure. And someone like Richard Spencer is he's more Swipple. He's from a fairly wealthy upbringing. So there is a class divide.
Yeah, there definitely is a class divide. Although a large part of it, though, is kind of phony, because you have a large group of people that are anonymous that are basically just like critique and kibitz, but like and call people trash, whatever. But then if you actually see them, like a lot of them, they look like total losers. So it's not like, some of it is just projection, I think, when you have this. It's like, well, it's like somebody like you criticizing how Heimbach looks or whatever. It's like, well, look at you, dude. Like you got a beer gut. You're fat too. Like, I mean, just kind of like that sort of thing. But there definitely is a kind of class divide. But I think that there is a also a divide between people who are like really obsessed with like reaching these normies, you know, so they could win elections and so forth, and disavowing certain things, disavowing people because and thinking that these people make us look bad and all this sort of thing. And I think that there's definitely some truth to that, but I think that also there's a danger in that a lot of those people that are susceptible to being shamed into conformity. And I think that is a huge issue. Instead of when you see someone like one of these people, you just say like, yeah, whatever, I mean, who cares? Yeah, I don't know. I take a who cares attitude towards a lot of this kind of stuff. Not like, oh my God, there's, look at all of this bad press. Like, normies are going to see this. Like, you guys really fucked up.
Do you see a total implosion of the alt-right happening?
I think so. But no matter what happens, though, there's going to be these ideas and things are going to keep coming back. Because all of these people are going to, these young people, these 20-year-olds and 25-year-olds that are going to go off and try to change the GOP and take it over and go for, like, American identity, like, demographically and electorally, like, that's not plausible to take back the country as a whole. So I think when that fails, those people are going to be back looking for alternatives, and I think that people who don't want to go that route, their focus should be on building alternative institutions to for when those people come back, or when other people get pushed back into this sphere, they'll have something to come to, because a few years ago there was just nothing. So that's what I think.
Among the people, well, you were talking about people like transhumanist and futurist. Among the people who identify with the alt-right, who would you say that you're closest to?
Like among the people that actually identify with the alt-right?
Would you,
I don't know.
Say it's someone like Arian Skynet?
Well, I'm friends with them. I don't necessarily ideologically align with everything they believe. I think that they're like a little bit more a little bit more hardcore on like the Jewish stuff and the and a little bit more closer to like to white nationalism and things like that. But I think that culturally I relate to them a lot more because we have a lot of similar interests and a similar outlook on certain on a lot of issues. They're a little bit more socially liberal and more imaginative, more creative. I also identify with Spencer to a degree because I feel like he's kind of always in like a no-win situation because he has all of these like critics from the peanut gallery.
Well, the thing about Spencer is he has to cater to a more right-wing audience, and he's put in this position as a leader, but if you listen to where he stands, he's mainly judged on his views on race, but on issues besides race, he's basically into a lot of this Whipple cultural stuff. And then on economic issues, he supports nationalized health care and a basic income. So,
yeah, and
he's
and
not even Spencer. In some ways, you could he's not right wing at all, and that's interesting,
right,
because I've heard mainstream conservatives say that the alt-right is a left-wing movement, I mean, that's not totally inaccurate. There are factions that are. They're using that as a pejorative. But if that were true, then that would be a positive thing.
Yeah, I agree. And so it puts me in a weird position because when people, a lot of people on the alt-right criticize Spencer, it's they're criticizing him for the things that, like, that I agree with, you know, intellectual honesty and, you know, just things like that. They're like, they will call him degenerate and things like that, or get on him for, like, refusing to disavow certain people, or they'll always just, that he's not not traditionalist enough or whatever. You know, it's kind of like when he says something that seems kind of socially liberal or controversial, then it's like these people, these, like, moralists, they jump all over it and they completely always, like, take it completely out of context.
Like, one recent example, what was that recent example? He said something about pornography.
Well, he said a couple things out of it. Like, he said, number one, he said that, like, pornography isn't an aphrodisiac. It's, like, actually a substitute for sex. And that, for some reason, that pissed off a lot of people, which, even though it's completely true, right? Like, you don't, like, watch porn to get yourself in the mood to go have sex with a girl. Like, you do it, you know, to get that out of your system and then go about your day or something like that. But, and then he said something else about, like, and this is also, like, what really got to people. So he said something about how studies show that, like, like a pedophile or something, if you showed them, you know, I don't even want to say the word, but, you know, like, that they are actually less likely to commit crimes.
Oh,
and that's just, like,
I remember Nick Fuentes was the one who went out and attacked him. And Nick Fuentes is this guy I think he's only 19. He showed up out of nowhere, and Richard Spencer wasn't even endorsing that kind of behavior. He was just doing, like, a thought experiment. But people were
making like an empirical statement. When you're like, oh yeah, studies show. Like, that doesn't mean that you're saying, you're advocating that it's legal. And people were saying, well, that means that if you're going to give it to people, it would have to be created or something like that. And it's like, well, no, not really, because it already exists. You wouldn't have to have, like, the government produce it or anything like that. And he wasn't even advocating that they should actually do that. He was just making
a hypothetical thought experiment.
Yeah, and it's like, you can't, it's almost like,
it even reminds me of when Milo said something very we did a show about that, and everyone on the right disowned Milo over just some really petty comments.
Well, and the ironic thing is that was one of the times that I disagreed with Spencer, because he was one of the one that was like, I don't see how Milo can recover from making
statements
like that.
Yeah, and I remember before that, you were actually criticizing, you were one of Milo's critics, and you ended up defending him when he needed defending.
Yeah, I don't know. I always wind up in these positions where sometimes I even go too far, because, like, you defend someone so much that it's like you got to step back and be like, well, wait a minute. Like, I don't even really agree with this person's worldview. I'm just annoyed at, like, the dishonesty of the criticism. But
yeah, I know. Yeah. I always, on every single show, I have to shamelessly plug my book, but I wonder how most of the alt-right would react to my book. I mean, a few people have reviewed it, like some of the eccentric weirdos like James O'Meara.
Like O'Meara.
But for the most part, how do you think they'd react?
Well, I mean, most of them would be appalled, probably, and I wouldn't be surprised if they would, like, publicly disavow you or something like that. I don't know. But
Matt Parrott on Facebook a while back, he made some comment, like, it's I don't know if he was serious, or he was like, he was probably maybe half joking, half serious. He's saying, Robert, I mean, I really hate to say this, but on the day of the rope, like, I'm afraid I'll have to send you to the gas chambers.
Well, you know, at least that's kind of a At least that's kind of a funny criticism. You know, he could have said a lot worse, but I don't know. He's long gone. So
yeah, he said he is basically stepping out of the movement permanently. He said that in an interview.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's basically all done. But I think it.
Do you see Roger Blackstone representing the values of the alt-right?
No, I think that he represents maybe our values, which are like, I don't know, completely, they're different. But like I said, you and I, despite what people say, like people like you and me, like we're not really alt-right. Like could never really fit in with that crowd. It's just kind of like, I used to think I could a few years ago, and there have been times when I thought, maybe it's kind of going in the direction of like closer to my views, but like, not really.
That's why you say left of the alt-right as opposed to the left wing of the alt-right.
Yeah, because I think a few years ago it was a much broader kind of thing, and then when it kind of became smaller into like white Sharia and all of this trad crap and
that came out more out of the Polchan Daily Stormer crowd rather than the trad.
Yeah, but it's interesting that the Daily Stormer is now trying to like rebrand themselves as like American nationalists, which is like, I don't know. They probably would have to change the name of their website, but
yeah, they always have something up there like the official site of the GOP or something so wacky.
Well, no, not just that, but I mean, if your website is called the Daily Stormer, like you're going to have a hard time rebranding it away from like neo-Nazis. But people aren't just going to forget like the 4 years of content that you had on there. But also, in just the another division, I think is what I found really annoying is just the mythology and of pinning everything on baby boomers. It's kind of like it's just total nonsense. I think I was listening to the Jim Goad podcast when he had Fuentes was on there, and Fuentes was going on and on about the boomers, and like literally every single thing he said was incorrect. Like he was blaming them for the immigration in 1965 when like they weren't even old enough to be in Congress yet. That was all completely the generation before that. And this idea that the boomers had it so easy, like they had everything handed to them, and that's why they don't understand, because it's like, well, actually, like a whole ton of boomers got drafted and sent to fight in the jungles of Vietnam while you're like 19 years old and like drinking Mountain Dew and playing fucking Xbox. So they didn't have it that great. And also then in the 70s, the boomers got stuck with all of these factories and things like that closing in the 70s and 80s and 90s, which... they voted for people like Perot, you know, to try to prevent, and they got screwed just the same as people now get screwed when they try to elect these politicians. The boomers were opposed to forced busing in the 70s.
Did you write an article called In Defense of Boomers or something like that?
Yeah, like a half-hearted defense of boomers, because I'm Generation X. I'm not a boomer, so I don't want to be like, oh, these guys are great and everything, but this kind of mythology that's developed about them among these young people, like, it's just the things that they say just aren't true. And even if you just watch old newscasts from the 70s with boomers, you find that they're a lot more woke, quote, on a lot of these questions than any of these, like, Generation Z or millennials. Like, it never crosses the mind of these kids that those people actually did do things to try to affect the system and try to change it, and they just got betrayed and thwarted, you know, right down to and this whole American identity thing. Like, that was like, you know, they elected Reagan. That was kind of a big part of that, of the patriotism and American identity. And then what happened is that he basically betrayed him by signing the amnesty in 86 and all of the trade agreements and all of that. So it was like, those people got they got screwed too. They didn't have it that great. And another thing, I don't want to harp on this too much because I know we've been talking for a while, but the boomers have a lot more skills than these young people. And by that I mean, like, my dad, for example, a boomer, built an entire, like, cabin with plumbing and electricity, like, by himself. You know, like a 2 or 3 bedroom cabin. And most of these, like, millennials and Generation Z people, like, they wouldn't even, like, know how to change a tire on a car. Like, so it's just kind of, it's kind of like, or especially if they talk about, like, reclaiming masculinity and all of this kind of stuff, it's like, you realize that these older boomers are, like, way more masculine than you guys, like, just because you, like, you go lift or something. I don't know. That's just my rant on some of these divisions. It's just more reasons to that divide me from some of these alt-right, or now post-alt-right people, and like these irony bros and things like that.
So where do you see this all going in the future? Right now I see a lot of the alt-right stagnating. I see more infighting. Do you see the kind of thing that you advocate for and the thing that I advocate for, which I guess it's been branded the left wing of the alt-right, or some people are calling it the alt-center, and putting aside all these labels, do you see that kind of stuff growing? Do you see some of it growing on a site like, say, the Unz Review?
A little bit. I think that ultimately it's difficult to say because whether or not these things grow at all, you still have the ultimate problem, which is that there aren't enough people to really win over for any of these kinds of to actually like to actually do anything nationally like significant. There aren't enough people to even convince for any of these ideas. Even if they were to grow and sweep huge amounts of the population, there's just you know, you have hundreds of thousands of illegals coming all the time. You have these new births that are coming in from, you know, you have like anchor babies and all this stuff. We've already kind of reached a point where you're gonna have to like you can try all of that, but you're really better off like looking for more exotic and imaginative alternatives. I don't know how many people are going to be willing to even do that, or how it's going to play out. But I don't know. I don't really. There's a long way to go. But I would say that these are kind of like we're pretty late in the game as far as saving America or restoring, reclaiming America and things like that. as like ridiculous as it sounds, like your chances are like better of like becoming a warlock or something and doing that. I mean, yeah, these are like, I remember like reading about how in the Roman Empire, there was like, as like the city was like about to be sacked by barbarians or whatever, they like, at the last minute, they kind of, some people like thought, oh, well, we should get away from Christianity and like we should
try to reach out to the old gods and perform some sacrifices and things like that, and then maybe they can say things. It's almost like similar to that. It's like we're almost at a point where it's like you're gonna have to summon some demons or buy some occult books and learn how to do telekinesis and that stuff. And I'm a huge skeptic fedora person. I don't even believe in any of that bullshit. So it's like if I'm like, oh yeah, well, our only hope is to just kind of become these warlocks or something, use sorcery to change things or a time travel or something like that. I mean, we're almost at that point.
Infiltrating the left is worth doing, or do you think the left is just totally worthless with all the identity politics?
Well, there's just a demographic ceiling to it. So it's like you can, even if you were to infiltrate the left, what are you going to do about all of the non-whites in the left that just absolutely want nothing to do with white people? They just despise them, and you see that in California, right? You're starting to see that the older the white senators Dianne Feinstein actually is getting pushed out because they want these to be represented by women of color, quote, and things like that. So you're starting to see that if you go in there, who are you going to even appeal to? It's the same thing as what I was talking about before. These people that want to take over the GOP and just focus on bettering yourself and your community and go to the parent teacher association meetings. It's like, well, okay, well, you're gonna go to that, and you're gonna go to these community meetings. It's gonna be 80% Indian or whatever. What are you gonna do there?
What do you think about that comment that Ashley Messinger made on our last show, where he says, "I don't need a totally pure ethno state, but something like a white Singapore would be workable." Where you have minority groups that maybe share your common values and you can work together. And I agree with him. I think that would work, but that's not the situation we have in places like here in California or you are in Arizona.
Yeah. I think that that's another part of the difference. Maybe you if you live in Nebraska or something like that, or in suburban Illinois, you might think, you look in your neighborhood and say, oh, we just need to focus on American identity and strengthen our communities or whatever. But if you're walking through Los Angeles or something like that, you just see just the zillions and zillions of people that you're just going to be flat out outnumbered when you try to do anything. And that's just kind of it's a little late in the game for that. That's why people talk about balkanization and secession movements and things like that, because we're kind of in that stage of the Roman Empire, when places have already been essentially taken over, and you're left with the eastern half of the Roman Empire. So,
some infighting going on between the people who wanted a white version of the Roman Empire that would include the United States, Europe, and Russia, against the people who were ethno-nationalists who wanted a bunch of smaller countries? And that may have been one of the reasons. Remember a while back there was that feud between Richard Spencer and Greg Johnson over... It kind of got started over the whole Ukraine conflict, but do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the feud between them has been going on forever. I don't want to get into their personal feud so much but that is a legitimate division between ethno-nationalists and people who want a kind of imperium Europe or something like that.
Yeah, I think Richard has kind of floated with the idea of a white imperium.
Yeah, and I guess that's just kind of a long-term dream or something. It's kind of a way of thinking big, thinking of something bigger. I think that my argument against that sort of thing is that if you've ever talked to European nationalists or identitarians, they just have absolutely no interest in that. So, like, it's kind of an American thing. Like, they don't really see us as being like them, really. Whenever you talk to Europeans, like, it's kind of like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, how do you do, fellow Europeans? And they're really like, well, you've never even been to Italy. Like, what do you, who do you think you are? You know, you're not like us. We're not like you American mutts or whatever like that. So I don't think that they, I can't ignore, I think that it would be a good idea to have like this federation that goes to space and kind of space empire and all that, but I can't ignore the fact that like Europeans just have absolutely no interest in that, and they would rather just have like their little Scotland or something like that. And we're almost getting to a point where we don't really have a choice. At a certain point, it just becomes it becomes delusional.
So, with the United States, do you see actual, balkanization in a literal sense of being broken up into a bunch of smaller countries, or you just more see something, a situation like neo-tribalism, but the United States will still exist as a political entity?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think that it's going to be very difficult to keep the United States from breaking up because it's so divided regionally. There is a good chance, though, that the government will do certain things, like in Obama was doing some of this, where they would take refugees and migrants and just dump them in these all-white small towns and things like that. So it's like you could make your neo-tribalist community in the middle of nowhere, but you're going to run into a problem when the government says, oh, let's just dump a few hundred Guatemalans in your neighborhood. There's nothing you can do about it. And we're going to send federal troops here to make sure that they go to school with your kids and so forth. And even if you were just going to buy a huge landmass in the United States and build a community that's like private property, the government can always do like what they did to those ranchers and just decide like we're going to claim this property for something or other.
There's this blogger called Mind Weapons and Ragnarok. I'm sure you're familiar with him. And his advice is to get involved in some economic niche. He recommends something that's future upcoming industries like biotech, transhumanism, and robotics.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that almost ironically, what these alt-right people should be doing, like Spencer, is they should be building a kind of mega corporation that would function almost like Scientology or something, right? Where you have it kind of has like its own structure and whatnot, and it has a way of generating income, and then at a certain point, it has enough money and usefulness that it can actually like develop some kind of autonomy of its own because it has its own apparatus for everything.
Because, earlier you were talking about how because we can't win over the masses, everything's a lost cause, but I wouldn't be so pessimistic because if you look at power, politics, and the economy, the masses are really totally irrelevant, not totally irrelevant, but somewhat irrelevant. It's really the top 1% or the top 0.1% that really dictates the destiny of the nation.
It is, but I think that in a sense you're not really, when I say all is lost, I mean like from an electoral standpoint, like reclaiming America for this or that ideology or something like that. If you create a trend like some kind of transnational corporation or something, and then it becomes kind of a state in and of itself, which is what some of these tech companies actually could be if they just took it a step further. And I think some of them actually will. You see that they're starting to, companies like Facebook, and they have their own plans to build their own communities where their workers are housed and whatnot. And that has its own set of problems, which we've talked about on other shows. But
Oh, was that when we were doing that show on the Bay Area housing crisis and these tech campuses wanted to build these self-contained cities?
Yeah, self-contained cities for the workers, and we talked about how, like, well, what do you do when you're off the clock but you're living in their little community? Like, are you going to get fired because they, like, they're monitoring you and you, like, watching porno or something? You know what I mean? Like, they're just, like, there's a whole set of problems with that. Or, like, what if you're working at a job and it sucks, but, like, you could just quit your job, but, like, what if, like, you rely on them to actually, like, house you and you've got to leave your house if you quit? I think you could – that's almost kind of its own kind of imprisonment. And these tech people often have a kind of warped vision of, like, how much people like working there. So you see these, like, idealistic CEOs and executives talking about how what a happy family there are. But if you actually look at, like, the reviews on Glassdoor or something of, like, the low-level employees that work there, they just, like, will totally, like, trash the place. So it's kind of like but imagine, like, if you work at Yelp or something and you hate your job, you're miserable, but you also live there and you can't quit or you won't have a place to live. They want to control, like, what you do off the clock at all hours of the day, like, or are you going to the gym 3 days a week and so forth? Like, we got to make sure you're fit so that we don't have to pay more health coverage for you. So that has its own set of problems. But I think that even, like, trying to say that you're going to build this giant, you're going to become part of the 1% and then influence the direction of American politics back to this other thing, back to it won't work in a way that can influence it towards any of their ideological goals, like being pro-white and that sort of thing, because it's just the demographics just aren't they're not there for that.
And it's also tough if you're a billionaire who has dissident views, because look at Peter Thiel. He's not even alt-right. He's more of a conservative libertarian, and he's been marginalized by his fellow billionaires in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, because you're ultimately going to be a kind of anomaly. And it's just kind of like, it's not really. And also, if you become that wealthy, you know, then there's always the danger of, like, you're too plugged into the system to really risk anything, which I think is part of the problem with these people that want to reach normies and whatnot. If you're already plugged into the system, you work for a company and you've got, like, a mixed race child or something like that. Like, if you're you rely on a paycheck from some company, you're not going to be willing to risk anything. So I think that that's always an issue.
Do you see groups like Orthodox Jews, Mormons, and some Asian groups who have their own institutions? Do you see those as groups to emulate?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I think that in terms of like, ironically, creating any kind of ethno state or anything like that, actually, Israel does give a bloody blueprint for that sort of thing, which is you get all your people to migrate somewhere, and then suddenly you declare it's your state, and then everyone gets pissed off and they attack you, and then if you survive, you've got a homeland. Like, that's they give the blueprint for one. That's one way to do it, but. I don't know. A lot of these things that once, just because something worked once, doesn't mean that it's going to work again, because other people have developed strategies toward thwarting even that. One thing I wanted to mention though before is that since we got a little off track, is the alt-right. I think that we've seen a kind of a parallel SJW culture is what we're seeing now. And I hate to be like a horseshoe theory kind of guy. I don't mean to go in that direction, but we're starting to see more and more people like trying to be shamed into publicly disavowing people they disagree with or that have said controversial things. We're seeing like, you know, do you disavow, like, this person was at your event, like, why did you allow them to be at this event when they said this or they did this? They make us look bad. And just, it's kind of like, because I always had this idea where if you didn't like somebody that was like maybe kind of vaguely on your side, that you just kind of ignore them and not outright disavow them or saying like, oh, well, I need to distance myself from this. It was kind of just like, well, I don't really agree with that guy, but I'm just gonna ignore him or like reluctantly tolerate him or something like that. But now we're starting to see that like these people are pressured to actively disavow and disassociate themselves with certain people that have said controversial things or maybe did something embarrassing. And
yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Can you think of a specific example?
Well, kind of like people getting on Spencer's case to disavow these other, like, Traditionalist Workers Party. And then after Charlottesville, right, it was like people are like, you got to disassociate yourself with so-and-so from here and that. And kind of like you see like these Twitter messages now or these tweets where it's like, I just want to say that put it out there that I don't want to have anything to do with this guy after this event and so forth. And it's kind of like, and people, but also people pressuring you, like,
well, part
why
of
are
the
you
problem
still with this
is that they are becoming mirror images of SJWs, but because they feel so under siege from the other side, when you feel under siege from a group, you start to adopt their tactics and even their mindset.
Yeah, and I think also, ultimately, they're I don't like a lot of the quote optics of these groups, like what they wear and how they look and how they present themselves in public. I think that there is a danger in this. Of you have people that are like, see, this is why we can't win, because you have people. It's kind of like you have to start with people that simply can't be shamed into conformity. Even if you're just like, yeah, I don't like what that guy's wearing, but who cares, man? Or something like that. Like you, some of these people are too easily shamed into conformity, and that's how they end up back in GOP or Conservative Incorporated.
We are at the end of the show. Before I wrap things up, is there anything else you'd like to add about these general topics about the implosion of the alt-right?
Well, it's kind of I think we just about covered it all. It's basically a shit show, and like I said, buy some books on the occult and become a warlock or a vampire or something.
Huh. You
know, whatever that's that's the way forward. Now, seriously, people should go back to writing and building alternative institutions, because everyone is going to ultimately keep coming back to this sphere of ideas when the traditional routes are found to be ineffective and eventually exhausted.
Brandon Adamson, it's been an excellent show. I'd like to thank you for being on.
Thanks again for having me, Robert.